Welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennials and Gen Xers from a left-wing perspective. It is Friday, March 24th, 2017. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And today, in case you're living under a rock or just didn't know, the healthcare bill, Trump care, Ryan care, GOP care, whatever you want to call
Republican it. Republican care. Republican, I don't give a shit care.
Yeah, Republican Armageddon, let grandma die care. Universally panned that nobody liked and nobody wanted and nobody supported and was pulled without a vote in the House today. So not only will it not get to the Senate, it didn't even get a vote in the House.
Let's talk about, just for a minute, that. Right. So,
okay.
Paul Ryan has been salivating for years about repealing Obamacare. Right.
He sure has.
And they have, I think it was 67 times in the House repealed Obamacare.
Yes.
Knowing that it wouldn't get to the Senate. And if,
well, even if it did somehow pass the Senate, then Obama would obviously veto it.
Right. Right. So, okay, Republicans. Let's repeal and replace Obamacare because it's the most awful thing that's ever existed.
Yeah.
You've repealed it 67 times in the House.
I voted to repeal it.
Now you have full control of the government, by which I mean the House, the Senate, the presidency, soon to be the Supreme Court. Let's do this. What happened, Trav?
Well, what happened was after several weeks, but really more intensely in the past week of cajoling and prodding and threatening and begging and pleading and crying and doing whatever else they could do to try to get their fellow House Republicans in line and on board, they just refused to take the bait and they said no. And the resistance came from both the right,
Freedom Caucus.
Right. The right end and the left end.
The moderate. Right. And everybody, like, no one wanted this bill. It was utter garbage. We're going to get to the bill in a minute. I just want to largely, like, as, like, a big tent theory.
Uh-huh.
Like, they've repealed Obamacare 67 times.
Yeah, literally 67
and
times.
And they ran on repealing and replacing, mostly repealing. And when they were finally in a position of power and they said, okay, we can do this, Paul Ryan was like, here's what I want to do. And everyone was like, that sounds awful. People are going to be super pissed at me back at home. They already are. I'm getting all these calls. This is not a good idea. What are we doing? Like, they were like, we'll repeal it when we're not in power and no one's going to sign it. Doesn't matter. When we're in power and we have to actually fucking govern, we're like, we're going to do something better that doesn't make any sense.
We have to craft legislation.
It's very complicated. And apparently Trump doesn't know what's in it. He's just like, I don't care. Just pass the thing because we said we were going to do it. Just fucking pass it. And then people were like, well, we're really upset. And he's like, what are you upset about? And they were like, well, this thing. And he's like, that sounds awful. And they're like, do you know what's in the bill? And he's like, I don't care. Just pass it because I said I was going to do it.
Right.
So do it. And then famously like, oh, well, no, sir, we're not going to. But it's so funny because they've been running on this for 7 years.
Yeah.
Like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to the country. We've repealed it 67 times. We have a plan. We're not going to tell you the plan until we're in power. Now we're in power, and oh my God, our plan is awful, and everyone hates it.
Well, they knew it was awful, and that's why they kept it hidden.
But it's like, okay, I'm just going to go strictly politics here without any, like, we're not going to talk about people in this moment. Just optics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just straight politics.
Mm-hmm.
You've repealed this thing that many times. You ran on repealing it for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
You finally got what you told everyone you needed to do this, right? You told everyone, well, we can't just have the House. We've got to have the Senate. Well, we can't just have the House and Senate. We've got to have the White House. Okay, we have all those things. We have this bill. It's fucking amazing. No one likes it. It's garbage. Never mind. Sorry, no. I mean, it's just without considering the horrifying implications of this bill.
Yeah, well, you
politics,
know what?
Just politics with me for a second.
That's what I'm going to do.
Optics.
Yeah, yeah.
Just optics and politics of this is so fucking bad.
Yes,
right?
Yes. And you know what? You mentioned a product of this whole greater, larger step back phenomenon of obstructing everything and promising to rip out existing legislation is way easier than actually governing and creating new legislation, especially when it comes to healthcare. But I think the sinking in of the reality for Republican, you know, Congress people is kind of the same with people at large. Like it's beaten into their heads over and over again. Obamacare's bad. We got to get rid of Obamacare.
Yeah.
Obamacare. And then like when they get down to it, it's like, okay, now.
Wait, you're going to take my health care away?
Right now
and
it's real.
It's not going to be covered. And also my husband is dying of cancer and I'm dying of this and I'm on Medicaid. And no, you can't take away this thing.
Right.
And
I need it.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe I didn't like it, but it turns out I actually need it, or I know somebody who needs it, or, well, because let's back up and do kind of a timeline, right?
Yeah.
Throughout the campaign, one of the biggest things Trump basically ran on a couple things. One, this amorphous idea of draining the swamp, whatever that means, which is obviously bullshit.
Right.
Two, repealing Obamacare. He talked about it all the time. Day one, we're going to repeal Obamacare.
Day one.
Because it's so bad and it's so terrible, and I'm going to give you something that's so great and you're going to love it so much.
It's going to cover everyone and it's going to cost less.
Well, he was still tweeting stuff like that, I think, last night, actually.
Cover everyone, cost less.
Cover everyone, like, cost less. Going to be great. You're going to love it. It's going to be wonderful. So,
then, plus, well, let's just, additionally to the other things he promised, like, build a wall. Mexico pay for it. No, we're paying for it. Like,
he's
made a million fucking promises.
But as far as Obamacare goes, this is what he said. And then he also sort of supplemented that idea with, but we're not going to mess with Medicare and Medicaid. Like, we're not going to touch that. I know you folks need
That's right.
So we're going to make a great Obamacare and we're not going to touch Medicaid and Medicare and everything's going to be great. And
repeal, not going to take away anything you like. Still going to be very different.
Right. And it's not like House Republicans that were trying to push him over the finish line or get reelected themselves were contradicting that and saying, well, actually, the Medicare and Medicaid part, not so much. Maybe like some of the real hardcore, you know, fiscal conservative types. But for the most part, they just were like went along with it, or they didn't say anything and whatever. But then Trump gets elected.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start hearing these things coming out like, well, what they would really like to do is just repeal and not replace. And then
that's right.
And then that gets horrible feedback for obvious reasons. Like, okay, you're just going to rip insurance away from 25 million people. And
well,
then
that was that wasn't even. So the 24 million people who would not have who would have lost coverage is with the repeal and replace. Repeal without replacing, I don't think there are numbers on. But
well, I'm just thinking of all the people that were signed up.
24 million people.
Under ACA, there's been like 20 something new.
24 million people would. Well, I don't know about that. What I know is 24 million people would.
Lord, that was
lose
a CBO. We haven't gotten to that yet.
With coverage.
With their replacement plan. Yeah, that's what the CBO estimated by 2020, I think. But what they wanted to do was just rip out Obamacare and replace and not replace anything. They're just, let's just go back to the old system because it was better.
Fuck it.
And then they got feedback like, okay, no, you can't just rip this away from 20 million people spontaneously with nothing. That's a horrible idea.
Well, I can tell you, like, I was having this conversation with my friend at work, and I was saying, because she was like, it feels a little coddling to let everyone have insurance until their kids are 26. Like, my kid's 25. He doesn't need my help. And I was like, that's great for your kid. But I was like, pre-existing conditions are a thing. And she's like, I don't really understand why that's a problem. And I explained to her like my specific situation, which is like, if I did not have employer health insurance at the moment, because I have endometriosis, I would be disqualified from having coverage for any endometriosis related stuff, or the fact that I had had previous cysts in my ovaries rupture.
Yeah.
I would not be covered for those cysts rupturing in the future. That used to be a thing, and kids, that used to be a thing like 8 years ago.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I can tell you that for me, while I'm not on ACA, I have, employer health insurance. The restrictions that were put on health insurance companies have benefited me greatly just in terms of pre-existing conditions. And certainly before I was 26 would have helped me tremendously, in addition to everything else it's done. But she was really surprised to find that out. And she was like, well, of course you would get coverage. And I was like, no,
no,
no, of course I would not get coverage.
Under
that's
some
the
of these
whole
proposals, yeah.
point. I would not get coverage. So I would just not have health insurance,
right.
even though
you need it. Obviously
I need it. So, that surprised her greatly, that I would not be covered, even though to her, I seem like a normal human that is deserving in whatever way. Which is where I'm sort of coming down on this, and we can get into the specifics of this stuff, but healthcare for me feels like a moral issue, not just from a progressive side, like it's a moral issue, everyone should have it. I agree with that. I do. Coming at it from the other side is interesting because they don't see it that way.
No, they
it's
don't.
It's not a moral issue.
They don't. But David Frum article today I'll talk about in a minute, but yeah.
But they don't see it as a moral issue. They
no.
see it as a who pays what why.
Mm-hmm.
And when I bring to them my story or the story of my friends, and there are many, they have empathy for individuals and they can start to see how it would make sense that we would have universal healthcare. But I can't ever seem to break through the barrier of the government is making you buy something and is making everyone do it. It's like this, the mandate is the wall I can't quite break through.
Sure.
They all agree that I should of course have healthcare, and of course health insurance companies should help me, and I shouldn't go bankrupt because I have this chronic pain disorder, and I shouldn't, obviously they say, right? As though it's obvious, but it isn't obvious. And
no,
it is
this
also
is why
not
we had to
guaranteed.
Fight for it.
And I did have to fight for it, and I did fight for it very hard. And
this is why the president,
yeah.
President Obama, put all his political capital
right.
in getting this through.
And it's not just for me. Like my condition is sort of minor comparatively. I mean, it's not, but
it's not life-threatening.
No, it's not life-threatening at all.
It's just extraordinarily painful.
It is extraordinarily painful and sort of debilitating and horrific, but it is nothing compared to what so many people go through every day.
Yeah.
And he fought for me and for them and for a bunch of people who were unable to be covered and were, you know, either on permanent disability or bankrupt or a number of just horrific outcomes that you could think of just because they were sick.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama sought to fix that, and Trump is seeking to unfix that, and you know that touches a chord with me, that touches a place for me that, you know, I can have sympathy for all kinds of people with whom I do not share who do not share my privilege, but when it comes to stuff like this, like it touches a place that affects me, and I can speak to it honestly. And you know, when Obamacare happened in 2009, my life changed, and the lives of the people around me changed for the better. And going back to or reverting to a place before that seems very barbaric and cruel and very terrifying and
very counterproductive to anything and everything.
It is counterproductive, but it's also cruel and terrifying.
Well, yeah, sure.
To people who are affected by it.
And you aren't the only one who felt that way.
No, at all.
I mean, people aren't talking enough about the way this was polling, even with Republicans.
Yes.
Nobody wanted it.
No.
So Trump was trying to whip the House into voting for something that their constituents didn't want.
Right.
Very small percentages.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the sort of the timeline of events here, right?
Yeah.
So Trump gets elected and you have Republicans and others talking about, well, we're just going to repeal. We're not going to replace it with anything. And then, okay, mm-hmm. that's not going to fly. Okay, we better replace it with something.
Right.
Well, where's the plan? Well, it's coming. No, where is it? Well, it's coming. And this is over the weeks and months as we're getting into January and into February. And then at some point, late February, early March, there is a, quote, plan out there. But nobody can find it. And nobody can see it. And Rand Paul goes on this famous treasure hunt. To try to
right,
find the bill.
Which we talked about in the last podcast. Right. He takes his copier and his news team and he walks down to the house.
Because he can't friggin' find the thing.
Yeah.
Now, Rand Paul's in the Senate. It turns out it's never even going to get to Rand Paul. But the point is, and why wouldn't they show it to anybody? Because if any of the details leaked, the bad press would have started weeks before because it was a nightmare.
It was.
So Rand Paul is trying to find the bill, and nobody can find the bill, and they're keeping the bill hidden because the bill is absolutely terrible, and the whole thing could be torpedoed weeks before they even take a vote.
Well, and now we know why.
Well, yeah.
We know why nobody wanted anyone to see it.
I guess the plan was don't let anybody see it, rush it through, get everybody to sign it, and then fix the huge glaring problems that would really screw it up in committee? I mean, was that the plan?
I don't know. I don't know what the plan was. I don't know that they had a plan. I mean, I know that Paul Ryan has been creaming himself over cutting these entitlement programs and cutting, repealing Obamacare and all of that. But I don't know.
Well, that's the main problem, right? I mean, we talked about this, that Trump was talking about repealing Obamacare on day one, but preserving Medicare and Medicaid. And
there will be no cuts to Medicare, no cuts to Medicaid, no cuts to Social Security. Yeah. That's a quote.
But, you know, eventually the details did start to leak out of what was in the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And people were horrified and nobody wanted any part of it. And it was a disaster. And this is before the first CBO report had come out. And you knew millions of people were going to lose their coverage, premiums, and the out-of-pocket payment for older Americans was going to skyrocket to cartoonish levels.
Yep.
The insurance would be more than their income.
Like older Americans, meaning people that are not yet qualified for Medicare, but who do not have employer-based health insurance. So people in their 50s, 60s.
Well, what
60s,
Medicare is, what, 65?
65.
Yeah.
So people that are 50 to 65 who are likely to be starting to be in greater need of healthcare services. They're kind of the big risk pool. They're fucked. Just fucked.
And let's talk about some other stuff because there's so many tentacles to this. But then people like Paul Ryan started to pretend to not understand how risk pools work.
Yeah.
And tried to I just assumed everybody was incredibly stupid and then got into the a la carte stuff. Why should, and it was always their argument, it was never the other way. It was always why should a man pay for services that are unique to women?
Yes.
They never made the counter argument.
No.
Why should a woman pay for my Viagra or my prostate exam?
Right. Or if you get prostate cancer, why should I have to pay for that?
No, they always were like, why should a man have to pay for maternity care or for mammograms?
Oh, man, I'll really be missing my mammograms.
Yeah, yeah, somebody said some fucking sarcastically asshole from Kansas. I think it was Roberts from Kansas. And it was incredible. And then it was earlier this week or last week, Paul Ryan actually got up with a dumb chart and said,
which was not a good idea.
The problem with Obamacare is that healthy people pay for sick people. I'm like, you're literally describing how insurance works.
Yes, that's what health insurance is.
Yeah.
The thing about this bill is something that's been talked about quite a bit, and I think it's a really salient point. This bill perfectly encapsulates the complete lack of empathy and moral center of this kind of, quote, fiscal conservatism. Mm-hmm. It is just
reading
through
it. Well, it goes beyond
fiscal
conservatism, because it's not fiscal conservatism when you get down to it.
I'm quoting them. That's how they describe themselves.
Sure,
right? Conservatives, fiscal conservatives. The problem with libertarians and the problem with conservative people who describe themselves this fiscally conservative way is that it's amoral. It is complete lack of empathy, of care, of compassion, of the basic social tenet that, like, we're in this together and that we should be helping people, it's just exposed so much by reading this bill, by looking at the things that they think are important and the things that they think are not important. The social contract seems to be something that they have completely thrown out the window. And I think it's important to talk about, like, okay, so you don't care about gay marriage and you don't care about, like, let's legalize drugs, whatever, libertarian style.
Uh-huh.
Now, fiscal conservatism is cruel. And so was this healthcare bill.
Right. And when they're in power, it's sort of like swaggeringly cruel.
Yes.
Like they take pride almost in talking about how they're going to screw over people to a point. And then the smarter ones step in and say, or either lie or say, no, well, we really care about people. We're just going to take away all their.
We care about your liberty more than we care about your life.
Right. Or they use the Franklin's buzzwords like, well, sure, people might not be able to afford this insurance, but now they have the choice, the freedom.
Yeah, like, the freedom to choose.
You can choose not to buy into this insurance if it costs $24,000 a year and you only bring in $18,000.
Yeah.
As if that's a choice.
That's a choice. Mm-hmm. Or you can just buy a la carte things because you absolutely for sure know what's going to happen to you in the next year.
Yeah.
You know for sure all the accidents and unforeseen illnesses.
You're
going to
have a heart defect.
Diagnosis of cancer or a ski accident. Or I mean, the whole fucking point of insurance is you're insuring yourself against the unknown.
Well, they know that. And this is what drives me crazy when people keep saying Paul Ryan's an idiot. No. Paul Ryan thinks you're an idiot.
That's right. Paul Ryan knows.
Paul Ryan understands how this stuff works and how it doesn't work. He is assuming the American people are hopelessly stupid. And of course, he's got good reason to after the election of this president. But I think he gambled too far in how much bullshit meaning the American people as a whole, conservatives, moderates, liberals alike, would be able to swallow when he gets up there and says things like the problem with Obamacare is healthy people pay for sick people, and that no, this is freedom of choice. If you choose not to buy an impossibly expensive insurance plan, that's your choice. It isn't freedom great. So support this.
Yep.
So you cannot have insurance but be, quote, free.
Right.
So and people were just like, no, we're not that stupid. We understand what this means. It means we're gonna get sick and die without insurance, you fucking tool.
Well, and I was saying for a long time after the passage of the ACA, and it's been in place for 7 years. And, you know, I think they underestimated how much people got used to having health insurance, how much people got used to a lot of the benefits the ACA provides, like pre-existing conditions and being able to stay
with
your parents' insurance and all of that.
It's more than that.
And so when they, you know, I think it was good political theater when there was no possibility of actually overturning it because Obama was not going to sign a law to overturn his own bill. So they could just repeal it and talk about how awful it is when they got into power and they have absolute control of the government right now. They have the House, they have the Senate, they have the White House, they're about to have the Supreme Court. And when they got that power and it was no longer political theater to talk about overturning Obamacare, it uh-huh. was a reality that they had to face.
Yes.
And their constituents went, wait. You can't actually take away my health insurance. And they were like, yeah, we can. And we're going to. And people lost their minds. Mm-hmm. And they went, we can't. This is bad politically. Like, it's bad. People are used to having these things now. And us talking about taking them away is one thing. Us actually taking away people's health insurance is not going over well.
Yeah.
And people woke up because it's a reality now. It's a they're governing now. So when they tell you we're going to take away Obamacare and then you elect them and they start governing, you can expect your health insurance to be taken away. And I think this is a big lesson for a lot of people who voted for Trump and voted Republican. As we've seen over the last couple of months, people in West Virginia and this woman and her husband's got cancer. And
sure,
like,
we've
they
talked
can't
about
actually,
that
right?
ad nauseum. Yeah.
This is happening now, and it worked. And people, it's a great wake-up call, I think, for a lot of them that, like, okay.
It would be a much bigger wake-up call if the fucking thing actually passed.
Right.
And thank God it didn't.
Thank God.
But if it did, then that would really be the day of reckoning, right?
Yes. Yes.
So they can buy some time, and I'm going to talk about the little games they're going to play here going forward. Trump is actually tipping their hand to the games they're going to play. But getting back to a couple things, you mentioned something about the lack of a moral compass of conservatives.
Yes.
And even David Frum, who nowadays is considered a moderate.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he was a George W. Bush speechwriter, and he is patting himself on the back as hard as he can because in 2009, he wrote a piece, or 2010, he wrote a piece, I guess it was right after Obamacare passed, about how you're never, ever going to get rid of it. And people who think they're going to get rid of it are fooling themselves.
Yeah.
And he made a lot of salient points. But then where I really just, the record scratch happened was we're getting to the end. And he's trying to reach out to his conservative brethren. I mean, he's basically been cast out of the conservative movement years ago for being critical of the Tea Party, basically.
Yeah.
And he said, like, okay, conservatives, maybe healthcare is not a universal right. And then that's when the record scratch happened for me. And I'm like, okay, hold on. Why not?
Yes.
Why not? Explain that, David Frum. Explain that, conservatives. Why is this hill to die on talking point that, and he went, and in context, he went on to say, but we should have some kind of option for universal coverage in this country. And I'm like, yeah, that part's great. But why do we have to preface this argument with, okay, look, we can all agree healthcare is not a right.
Right.
And I'm like, why
no,
are
we
hung
cannot.
Up on that
no,
idea?
I don't agree with that.
And it's
I
always,
don't get
it. It's people making that argument are always people who have never not had health care.
Yes. I have gone through long periods of time without health insurance.
Me too. I mean, I was going to get to that too.
Yeah.
So I want somebody to ask David Frum. I wish I could ask him. Like, explain that part to me, please.
Yes.
Before we go any further. And I know in the context of this article you were penning, you were trying to have an olive branch out to your hardcore libertarian friends and Cato Institute friends and conservative friends. And say, look, I know that it's not a right. I'm not trying to be hippy dippy here, but we should. It's like, why is it not a right?
Yeah.
I mean, you folks on that side of the ideological spectrum scream and howl and holler about rights all day long. Why doesn't this get to be one of them? Mm-hmm. The right to bear arms and the right to what you call religious freedom and the right to this and the right to that. But somehow right to health care is taboo because something socialism. I don't like explain this.
I don't get it. I don't.
And I want a conservative to explain it. Maybe we should have Raul on to
Maybe
explain
we
that.
Should. Because
I mean, he'll say something socialism probably, but
well,
I want to know in a more philosophical sense.
This is the, I feel like whenever you have like people on the opposite sides of an issue, there's always, you have to narrow it down to what are we really fighting about? And for this issue, that's exactly what it is, right? We're not really fighting about entitlements or spending or like, that's all peripheral. The base starting point of where we disagree is I think healthcare is a right and they do not. And that's where the argument should start, because if you can win over the idea that as American citizens, we should have a right to be treated by doctors when we are sick or injured, that should be something extended to every person who lives in this country, that should be extended to every person in the world, that if you have the right to own a gun and you have the right to, a speedy jury trial, I think that those things are less vital than the right to not die because you got sick and you don't have money.
Sure. And if you want to talk about, history, maybe we're evolving now, right? Maybe we're getting to a better place, hopefully, in this country where we can do better than we did.
We already recognize that healthcare is a right, or we wouldn't have Medicare. The reason we have Medicare is because old people were dying impoverished in the streets.
Sure.
And we said, that's bad.
Yes.
And they said, we can't work anymore and we can't afford it. And they said, regardless, you can't just let people die in the streets.
Yeah, then even Trump said Medicaid. As much during the campaign.
Next was Medicaid, and we said, look, these are...
Just because they're poor doesn't mean they should die in the streets.
Doesn't mean they should die. Right. Because they were.
But conservatives hate both those programs. They have never accepted them. They want to get rid of them. That was part of this bill,
right.
was Ryan trying to essentially send them on a death spiral.
Right. But as a country, the reason that touching Medicare is like the third rail, like don't even try, is partly because old people vote.
Yes. It's 95% because old people vote.
But it's also because the country likes it. The people like Medicare.
Yeah, they like to know when I get old and I'm too old to work, I'll be able to see a doctor and get medications.
My parents aren't going to die in the streets,
right,
because they can't afford insurance.
Right.
This is a thing that affects everybody.
Or that you'll have to take them in and
right.
play wet nurse.
Right.
Which is what people used to do.
Right. But even if you play wet nurse, I can't fix your cancer.
Well,
like, I don't have a chemo machine in my house, and I don't know what the fuck I would do with it if I had one.
Right.
Like, so... But again, so that comes down to the basic fundamental disagreement that Paul Ryan and the rest of the country are in.
Well, even David Frum, to an extent.
Whether or not it is a basic human right. And we had this back in 2008 when we were trying to pass Obamacare.
We got into some of those fundamental questions.
Yeah, that's the core.
Yeah.
Just like the core of abortion is fundamentally whether or not the
woman
fetus is a human.
Sure, sure.
And women, are they human also? Because we're not sure about that yet.
No. We'll never be sure about that.
Yeah. But if you can so I'd love to have that conversation with
someone
who feels
like
it's not.
Sure, but in 2009, 2010, they shifted away from that should you even have a right to healthcare argument into the fallacies of death panels
right.
and pulling plugs on grandma mm-hmm. and the government doling out... socialist style medicine like the Soviet Union.
There was going to be huge weights and you would...
Which all that stuff worked.
Yeah.
That's why there was tremendous opposition.
Yeah.
But...
And continued up to this day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, all that messaging was incredibly effective.
It's way, way less now.
And
we
have talked about this ad nauseum. The Democrats' messaging was just fucking garbage and or absent.
I'm starting to also learn that part of the reason was that they were too busy actually crafting a bill.
Yeah, but then after it passed...
Bill. Oh, no, it was terrible.
It was just like, they'll know.
And they
see. Once they get it, they'll like it.
And they
It'll
couldn't
be fine.
Get their IT ducks in a row.
No,
couldn't sign up. And yeah, there was a lot of problems with the rollout in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
But we got past it.
Now people don't want to give it up.
Well, and I'll give you another example, right? I was between jobs, and I've been in that position before, once or twice in my adult life. And this most recent time... And I know it works different in every state, but I could have either had no coverage or, which is in the old days what happened. Like before mm-hmm. 2008, if I was between jobs or I was just out of school and I started a new job, I just didn't have health insurance.
Yeah, me too.
And I just crossed my fingers and said, hope I don't get hit by a bus or get really sick. If I do, I will get treatment and then I'll be in debt for the rest of my life, or I'll file bankruptcy mm-hmm. or I will go to court and plead for them to reduce the bill. Or this is what people used to do.
Yeah.
And you know, we realized maybe there's a better way to do that. Well, most recently, I got on the Colorado Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
I found a decent plan for about $145 a month after the subsidy.
Yep.
And it wasn't a perfect health insurance plan, but it was pretty good. And I got some care that
affordable.
I needed. And it worked out really, really well. And especially people in states where we have functioning exchanges and Medicaid expansion.
And in Colorado, we did an exceptional job.
We did.
Way better than the feds.
There's some problems here. Prices, you know.
Yep. prices and competition aren't great.
No, no. And somebody, I think one of the big ones just pulled out and premiums are rising a little bit, but it's still basically functioning.
Yes.
And
everyone can get coverage.
And everyone can
that
get
can
coverage.
Afford it. And if you are, and we also accepted the Medicaid expansion. So a shitload of people in Colorado are on Medicaid that were previously not on Medicaid.
Yeah. Yeah. And that overall lowered emergency room visits and costs. Yes. And I mean, it was, it just makes so much sense. But back to the sort of timeline of how this Trump Care thing blew up, right? So it's leaking out the details of it. Then finally the CBO report comes out and it's devastating. 24 yeah. million people by 2020 are going to lose coverage. Older yeah. Americans are going to pay a fortune. And then even in that scenario, they can't get enough hard right Freedom Caucus people.
Yep.
So Paul Ryan sweetens the deal. But he did several things to do this. But one of the things was he either floated the idea or put into the idea of removing what the ACA called essential health benefits.
Yes, the 10 essential health benefits.
Now, so explain what that is and what Paul Ryan did to try to bring more super right-wingers on board
right.
this week.
So President Obama and Congress, when the ACA was getting passed, decided that in order to provide... That if you want to provide health insurance,
if you want to call yourself health insurance, basically,
there are 10 things that you absolutely have to cover to be considered health insurance, right? Mental health care was in there, maternity leave and prenatal care.
Medications. Because they used to be separate, remember?
Yes. Yeah. You didn't have to provide prescription, like you pay a copay now. That didn't used to be a thing. Wasn't required. Most health insurance provided all of this, but it wasn't required. And some people had catastrophic plans that didn't cover these things. And they just said, look, there's a basic minimum level of care that has to be present in order for you to call yourself health insurance.
Yeah.
So these are the 10 essential benefits, like very basic things, like you said, medication, but things like maternity care and prenatal care and pregnancy care, right? Which is so crazy that they want to get rid of because so pro-life.
Oh, no, it's pro-fetus. Let's get serious.
No, it's not pro-fetus because they want to get rid of cover the care of the fetus while it's incubating.
But
that's
poor people fetus.
But let them have abortions. I don't understand. It's fucking crazy. Anyway, so Paul Ryan decided that that had to go. We should not tell insurance companies what they have to cover anymore. So they no longer have to provide these 10 essential benefits, which basically means I don't know what they have to do. What is health insurance? If not like hospitalizations, medication, mental health care,
it goes back to this universal thinking of the market solves everything. Like, okay, we won't make these required by the government, but look, if these plans are going to be competitive, of course they'll cover that stuff.
But they won't.
Of course they will.
And people are not going to look into...
Right, I'm saying that's their argument.
Right. But people are not going to look into this plan. They're going to go, oh, that's the cheapest one. It's $86 a month. Great, I'll take it.
And guess what?
It covers
nothing.
And then they try to use it. And then they're like, no, we don't cover that. No, we don't cover that. No, we don't cover that. No, we don't. So, and because of the way insurance is set up, right, with these open enrollment periods, once you buy the shitty insurance, it doesn't cover anything.
You're stuck
for a year.
Yeah.
So, good luck. I mean, ACA has problems. I will admit that. But it was a very carefully thought out, very
comprehensive,
well discussed, thorough, wonky policy. And there needs to be a couple of tweaks here and there, and there needs to be some changes. But this is not, it's not like they didn't think about it. You know, it's not like...
It's not like they rushed it through in a week.
They just said, oh, fuck it. Just get rid of it and we'll say this. And if whatever you want, we'll do it. We don't care about health insurance. We care about thumbing our nose at Obama and making Republicans look good.
Yes.
That's all. Fuck health insurance. I don't care. It doesn't matter what the impact's going to be.
Well, that's literally what Trump said.
Fuck it. He doesn't know what's in the bill.
No. And then we've gotten reports from this from all over and that trying to sit in the meetings or whatever. He didn't want to know the details.
No.
He didn't care. Just pass it.
Just
whatever.
Make me look good. I don't
make
care.
Me look
what,
good.
Just don't give me details. What? I don't care. I'm fine.
Forget that
I'm a
it,
billionaire.
That it's essentially a huge tax cut and then it screws Medicaid and Medicare, which he promised to preserve. Yep. He doesn't give a shit.
No.
Just get rid of Obamacare. That's what I said I would do.
Yep.
Anyway, so they try to sweeten the deal. They're still not getting people on board. Now they're losing some, quote, moderate Republicans, which mm-hmm. they're not really moderate Republicans, but they're moderate in the sense of they don't want to go back to their own constituents and yeah. say, I took away your health care.
Yep.
That makes them, quote, moderate.
Yep.
And so then Trump brings out the big guns. Yeah. He sends out, like, Bannon and Stephen Miller and Kellyanne Conway to threaten and cajole and arm twist and say, look, I don't effing care. You have to pass this because this is Trump's big thing.
Yeah.
If we don't pass this big thing, come on, we're kind of screwed.
Mm-hmm.
And the House Republicans, enough of them, were just like, no, this bill sucks and I'm not going to pass it. And it's got 17% approval right now. Mm-hmm. The most sycophantic of sycophants who don't know or care what's in the bill, probably.
They at least know how to read a poll.
Yeah. Yeah. We can't pass this. And then Trump, up till literally the last minute.
Well, he went to meet with them, right?
Well, yeah, he went to meet with them several times over the last couple of days. And yeah. he sent Bannon, and he sent Conway, and he sent Lord knows who else.
And they put them on a list, and I'm going to come after you if you don't do this and really try.
Yeah, they
to
tried everything. Yeah. He tried joking. Yeah. He tried good cop, bad cop. He sent Bannon the bad cop in. He tried subtle threats, hints, I'm going to be bad. It's like, there's nothing he can even do. We're so many against it. I don't even think he can start to point the blame, and he decided not to, and we'll get to that in a second. But basically, up until the very, very last minute, he thought, bring it to the floor. At yep. the end of the day, I think they're going to vote for it.
Yep.
And
he demanded it. He said, you will vote on this
right.
today.
And
we're
then,
done negotiating. This is it. Put it to a vote.
And then Paul and Ryan, said, up until the 11th hour, tried to do it, got a final tally, went to see Trump an hour before it was going to hit the floor,
yep.
said, here are the numbers. If this comes to the floor, we're going to lose, and we're going to lose badly.
Yep.
And it's going to be even worse. The best thing, honestly, is just to pull the fucking thing right now.
Yep. It's going to be more humiliating to lose by as many votes as we're going to lose by on the floor in a public vote than to just pull the fucking thing.
Yep. And
he must have made some sort of,
no, that's exactly
argument.
What he said.
Yeah.
That's what he said. He said, sure, I'll bring it to the floor. It'll lose badly. That'll be a huge humiliation. If we just pull it, it'll just be a bad humiliation.
Right.
So it's either bad or horrible. And Trump said, okay, I'll go with bad.
Yep.
And then the first people he called were the Robert Costa at the fake Washington Post and Maggie Halberman at the failing New York Times. Trump personally. He's so weird, man. This guy. He didn't call Hannity. He didn't call InfoWars. He didn't call his buddy over at Newsmax.
Mm-mm.
He called the Washington Times and the New York
Post.
Washington Post and the New York Times.
Yeah.
So, and said, I'm pulling the bill. And of course, that sort of worked because Costa was like, well, Trump's not an ideologue. He's trying. He's learning. He did the smart thing. It's like, yeah. You want to keep make sure he keeps you on speed dial, you fuck.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and that's kind of where we are. And then
Paul Ryan came out and said, Obamacare is the law of the land for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Trying to say like they're still under this illusion that it's so unpopular and it's failing, and it's really not. They could push it along to try to help it fail, and we'll get to that in subsequent episodes. I don't want to get lost in that right now.
Yeah,
because this is going to be a months long thing.
Yes.
But then I just want to get real quick to where Trump did. Trump is even heavier under this illusion that everybody hates Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, well, you can blame the Democrats for this because none of them wanted to support this bill, and now they own Obamacare. It's like, well, actually,
yeah,
they've been owning it for the last...
They have been trying to do that. They're fine with that.
For the last 8 years. So
it's fine. We'll take it. I own Obamacare. It's good. It's great. Yes.
So that's kind of it. That kind of wraps up the whole deal on... Any closing thoughts before the break on the huge failure of Trump care.
Are you tired of winning yet, Trev? So I'm not. When he said that, I didn't think he was talking about me, but apparently he was.
Well,
because he just cannot catch a fucking break, and I love it.
Yeah. The only breaks he's catching is that the economy's still kind of humming along,
and
which he's trying to take credit for.
He's pushing through his garbage cabinet, but everything he's trying to do that he's promised to do, he has been unable to do so far.
Yeah.
He's been thwarted at every turn, every time he does anything, period.
And we'll get
fucking awesome.
We'll get to more of that in the second half. There's a revised Muslim ban that's out there that's got all kinds of court challenges that are coming up in the coming weeks. Mm-hmm. After
one thing I do want to say, I think we should take credit where credit is due. A shitload of people called.
Oh, yes.
And wrote letters, yeah, and went to town halls and held their congresspeople accountable about affordable health care.
Yes.
And that is ultimately what made the difference in these people not voting. Period.
No question about it. Yeah.
Partisan politics aside, these congresspeople heard from you loud and clear that you did not want this and they could not vote for it because they heard from you in unprecedented numbers.
Yep.
So congratulations. Thank you so fucking much. I love each and every one of you who made phone calls, wrote emails, went to town halls, wrote letters. Anything that you did, bravo, because you made the difference ultimately.
And we're going to be hosting some workshops to teach younger people who...
anyone.
You know, it's really encouraging. Among our work peers and social peers, we're getting a lot of people coming to us, mm-hmm, saying, okay, I've been on the sidelines long enough. I want to do something.
I'm feeling guilty at this, yeah, point. And I'm scared. And like, more, not scared as much, because these are like a lot of, you know, white folks that are like, I feel bad. I'm not doing enough. I want to do something.
Right. These are 20-somethings mostly.
Yeah.
And they're saying,
Although there's some in their 40s.
Some are.
You know.
But they're like, I don't want to just post on Facebook or Twitter. I want to actually do something. How do I do it? And we're going to hold workshops.
Yeah.
And teach them how to write call to or
like
form packs or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. And here's who your representatives are. Like, start small. And what issues do you care about? And we're going to, so we're going to do some of that stuff because I want to bring these people in while the getting's good.
Strike while the
iron's
hot. Get
them engaged. Yeah. And then keep them where they are.
So coming up after the break, James Comey goes to Washington and all kinds of Russiagate stuff happening,
uh-huh,
and intrigue as far as that goes. Mike Flynn in a plot to kidnap a Turkish national and all kinds of other shenanigans. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. So we dedicated the whole first half of that show to the American Health Care Act debacle,
mm-hmm,
embarrassment for Trump and Ryan, but so much more happened this week.
Yes.
So let's rewind and go back to Monday.
Okay.
When, to somewhat of our surprise, James Comey went up before Congress and basically... validated what we already knew, that yes, Russia undoubtedly hacked the election and influenced the results, and that they are, the FBI and other agencies, but he spoke for the FBI, has currently an investigation going on to see about ties to the Trump campaign,
yes,
and potentially the existing Trump administration.
Yes.
And it was a bombshell, and everybody
No one expected it. There was supposed to be a lot of hand-wringing and maybe
we can't comment on a potential ongoing investigation, but he
was like,
he confirmed
straight
it.
Up. Yep. We are investigating. There's an active investigation.
And that sort of led into the newest and potentially most important name in this whole debacle, a name that you'll be knowing very well. Devin Nunes from California, who is the Republican co-chair of the House Intelligence Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the House Committee, right?
Yes.
Okay. And he is very obviously an out front, playing a sort of shadow, well, not even a shadow game. He's just basically, he's playing Spicer's role, essentially, as the co-chair of the intelligence committee with this investigation. And
it's literally his job to investigate the administration. That's the point of this committee.
Yeah.
And he is acting as a spokesperson for the Trump campaign.
Well, he's doing more than that, too. He's leaking classified information to sort of pump up conspiracy theories about Obama wiretaps, and then he's he's briefing the White House in private before coming to his colleagues in the Intelligence Committee. It's a fucking nightmare. Yes. It's a zoo, and he's sort of doing it without much covert, like, this is not House of Cards shit where he's sneaking around and doing it undercover in darkness. He's like, no, he doesn't know what he's doing.
No. He's relatively new, from what I understand. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of the star of the show, and somebody that has been standing out for me since the Benghazi hearings, but definitely with this Russia shit, is Adam Schiff.
Yeah.
During the Benghazi hearings, I didn't know who he was, and I watched all 13 hours of those hearings. And every time it was his turn, I was like, ooh, here we go. Because he was so good and he's so eloquent. And he, at the beginning of the hearings, he very carefully and thoroughly and effectively mapped out where we started and where we are now, and what has been being called the circumstantial evidence that suggests that there's a lot of bullfuckery going on between the Trump campaign and potentially the Trump administration and Russia. And I think it's like a 3 or 4 minute clip that you can watch that really ties together. Like, it just is ABC 123, here's what happened and here's what we know. And he said, this isn't even classified intelligence that I'm telling you. This is public record stuff that we can look to and put the pieces together. And that's what we're here today to talk about. And it was an incredibly effective 3 or 4 minutes. And I highly recommend that you Google it and watch it, because he's kind of great. And he did a really great job. And the frustrating thing for me, I guess, is then he said the word circumstantial evidence. The guy's a lawyer. And people don't really understand what that means.
Yeah, you can get convictions based on circumstantial evidence.
It happens all the time. Most of the time.
Yeah.
Most
of the time you don't have the luxury of this DNA of the blood matches this person.
No.
That's not
Law and Order. That's not how it usually works. So let me just give you the example that he gave on an interview that I saw. He said he was trying to defend the use of circumstantial evidence, and he said it this way, which I think is brilliant. He said, if you wake up in the morning and you go outside and you see snow on the ground, you can infer it snowed last night.
Mm-hmm.
That's circumstantial evidence. You did not witness the snow falling from the sky. That would be direct evidence. Mm-hmm. Circumstantial evidence is I woke up in the morning and there was snow on the ground when there was none when I went to bed. That's circumstantial evidence that it fucking snowed, right? That's literally the difference. Watching the snow fall from the sky, collecting the snow, examining the snow, and confirming it's snow falling from the sky, that's direct evidence. Circumstantial evidence is looking at the ground and going, I can infer that it snowed.
More or less.
That's the literal thing that he said, and he's a lawyer. But that's essentially what it is, right?
Well, he's a seasoned prosecutor.
Yeah.
And Nunes, I'm not sure if... I don't think Nunes is a lawyer.
I don't know that much about him other than he seems very sleazy and moronic and doesn't have a lot of...
I think he's got a journalism background. I don't think he's got a law background.
I'll look it up real quick. But
anyway, I want to give a shout out to our good friend Greg Dworkin, who's been on the show and a huge fan of. His son, Scott...
Yes.
Has become a relentless warrior, especially on the Trump-Russia front.
Yes.
And apparently he just reported Devin Nunes to the FBI Office of Public Corruption because he uncovered a Russian business partner, something with a winery. I'm sure it's not anything the FBI is not aware of, but I think this is the sort of thing to let us in the Twitterverse know. But Scott Dworkin is a tireless.
No, he is completely obsessed and on point, and like everything he does is about Trump Russia. And you should follow him on Twitter. It's what is it at Scott Dworkin? I don't know.
At Funder.
F-U-N-D-E-R. Yeah, he's great. Okay.
Yeah, and he's been on MSNBC a few times. He's got a good rapport with Joy Reid. He pops in on her show quite often, and hopefully you might see him on Matto and stuff, but soon. But yeah, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. He is sort of become the de facto Twitter warrior in this, trying to uncover all the Trump Russia shenanigans.
Right.
He is just all over it all day, every day. Follow him.
Yes. Okay. Devin Gerald Nunez is in California's 22nd congressional district. I was right. He's really new. He took office in 2015.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's one of those.
Baby.
Let's see.
Yeah, I don't think he's got
There's
a law degree, but I might be.
Not a lot of info about him around.
He's a shadow guy.
He's new, right? He is.
He went to Yale, right?
Let's see. He got an Associate of the Arts degree from the College of the Sequoias.
That's it.
Then
no,
he
I'm
graduated
kidding.
From Cal Poly San Luis Obispo with a bachelor's degree in agricultural business and a master's in agriculture.
Oh. He's a farmer.
So he's got
Cal Poly for agriculture
of experience.
But
politics.
No law school, right?
Not.
Well, that's why Schiff's going to eat him alive.
Uh-huh.
And is eating him alive.
Yeah.
The problem is, though, everybody keeps talking of he needs to get kicked off the House Intelligence Committee. The only way that could possibly happen is if Paul Ryan kicked him off.
Yeah.
And Paul Ryan's not going to do that.
No. Nope.
Because he's the one that's holding this all together. He's holding the lid off the jar of screaming tigers, and he barely is doing it, but he's doing it, and he's really the only one who can at this point.
I mean, he's the only one that's willing to.
So unless something gets exposed that's so shocking and horrifying in public that, like, Paul Ryan has no choice, then, you know, Nunes isn't going anywhere. You're just going to have to work around him, kind of.
Yeah.
And it's going to have to be up to the media to expose everything that the House Intelligence Committee can't, because Nunes is literally running interference for the White House.
Yeah.
When
asked for
Nixonian to an nth degree.
Right. Everything is to the nth degree with this administration. When he was asked about a special investigation, he said the House, quote, will not engage in a witch hunt. And at this point, there's nothing there. He rejected calls that he should request Trump's tax returns. He was a member of the Trump transition team.
Yeah, yeah, that's another important point.
After Michael Flynn resigned, it was revealed that he had covertly communicated with, and because he'd covertly communicated with Russian officials, Nunez said he would not seek to investigate Flynn's ties to Russia. He said, quote, from everything that I can see, his conversation with the Russian ambassador, he was doing this country a favor and he should be thanked for it. So that's fun. He's been characterized by his opponents as being confrontational and sharp-tongued.
Ah.
He wrote in his book, apparently he's got one of those.
Oh, sure. Everybody
that
does.
Members of the environmental lobby were, quote, followers of neo-Marxist, socialist, Maoist, or communist ideals. He said of Nancy Pelosi, for most of the 20th century, people fled the ghost of communist dictators, and now you're bringing the ghost into this chamber. He hates Dianne Feinstein, so that's fun, because they're both in California and they disagree over water policy. Namely, she thinks people should have it. And he was a farmer, so, you know, I don't know. Anyway, he's garbage. And
well, sure, but more important than being a typical Republican House garbage person, he's now running interference for the Trump administration,
yes,
to try to keep the lid on all the Russia crap.
At the same time as being the co-chair of the committee that's supposed to investigate this,
sure,
stuff.
But he's being so transparent about his shenanigans, it's kind of embarrassing.
It is.
And I don't know where we go from here, but this is the latest that what happened, right? Because Schiff basically Schiff came out and said earlier this week, actually, I've seen a little more than circumstantial,
yes,
evidence now that ties,
yes,
the Trump campaign to,
yep,
the Russian shenanigans.
Yes.
And then there was going to be a hearing on Tuesday where Sally Yates was going to come in,
yep,
and testify. And Nunes unilaterally canceled that.
He canceled future hearings in,
yeah,
general.
And then ran to the White House.
Yeah.
And is conferring with them. Comey showed up at the White House yesterday. There is so much crap going on here. I'm not sure where it leads. I Giuliani was on Capitol Hill yesterday. There's a cover up in the works, and obviously, I mean, that's not a news flash.
No.
So the question is, who's going to uncover it? We know Schiff is going to do his best. We know the minority Democrats are going to do their best, but it's really going to be up to the media. It's going to be up to very dogged
investigative
journalist reporters.
And I'm sorry, leaks. That's, you know, we're going to need a deep throat.
Yeah, we are. And so in that way, that probably explains why Trump gives the exclusive of him pulling the bill to Bob Costa and this New York Times reporter. There's crossed two off the list that might not dive as deep if they don't want to lose their access.
Their access to bullshit.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of other reporters out there who are not going to take that bait. And I mean,
and I also
there's
think
just
the intelligence
so many loose
community,
threads.
I really do. I think the intelligence community is going to take this very seriously. You know, all these people
I don't
that
trust
Trump
Comey, though.
Is surrounding. I don't either. But he's not the only person that works for the intelligence agencies. I think that regardless of, you know, what the face of our current government looks like and these kind of clowns that Trump has surrounded himself with and all these yes men, I think that the intelligence agencies remain career professionals who are not just going to take lightly the idea that the Russian government has interfered in our electoral process and potentially undermined our democracy. And I think there's some people within these agencies that are going to doggedly dive down and figure out what the fuck happened. And then if they can't go public with it, or they give it to these House Intelligence Committees who do nothing with it, there's going to be somebody who leaks it, because the very future of our democracy depends on it. And these people are serious people.
You would think so, right?
I do think so.
There's also people in the intelligence communities who have been and will continue to run interference for Trump, though.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget about
mm-hmm.
that. There's
Absolutely.
The Giuliani New York FBI wing of the FBI who's going to try to bury this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I do have great faith in the seriousness of the people in these agencies, particularly the non-political appointees, the people that are just career spies and career investigators and people that, you know, have been working here for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And fuck Trump, fuck these people. This will not stand. And, you know, maybe it's classified and whatever, but I think that between the media and the intelligence agencies, it's gonna come out. We're only, what, 60 days in? 67 days in,
mm-hmm.
I think within the next year at the outset, at the longest, the house of cards always folds, right?
Usually.
I am choosing to be optimistic and say, if we're only 60 days in and we're already at this kind of peak crisis moment of there's more information, like, it doesn't need to happen in the next 2 days. It can happen in the next 6 months, and it's still going to happen. It's going mm-hmm. to come out what happened. It always does.
And then the question is, what does Congress do with that?
Yeah.
What do the courts do with that? Yep. What do we as the American voting populace do
That's
with
right.
that? As do citizens. We shrug and say, whatever, we don't care?
I don't think so.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how much our parents care.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
It's going to get
Cold
more
War
interesting.
Cold War babies who just are sort of shrug about Russia.
Well, let's talk about some of the revelations that came out this week, like with Paul Manafort.
Okay.
Like, we now know that tens of millions of dollars have shifted from pro-Putin political interests into Paul Manafort's personal bank account.
Yes.
Up through and during the Trump campaign, as far
yes,
as I remember.
And transition. Yes.
We know he was helping the pro-Putin guy in Ukraine. We know there are other ties.
Turkey.
Well, we haven't even gotten to Turkey yet.
Yeah.
That's Flynn.
Right.
But, and then Paul Manafort's own daughters kind of want to disown him because they're sick of him.
Text messages?
Yeah, they're sick of him propping up these dictators, and they're humiliated to be associated with it.
And they basically said to each other, like, remember when he killed that guy in Russia or something? And they're like, whoa. I mean, we can't validate that that's necessary. They haven't come out and said, yes, I sent that text, and here's the evidence that my father killed someone. But again...
Yeah, they didn't want to just be associated. They didn't want to turn a blind eye and say, so my dad does these things. It's like, no, I don't want to have anything to do with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Credit to them for that. So Manafort's neck deep. He has said he is going to talk to the Intelligence Committee. Yeah. Not necessarily on the record or in person. I mean, it'll be on the record, but not televised or public necessarily.
Right.
Roger Stone has said he's going to talk.
So
I don't know if that's true.
Do you feel like Manafort's going to be the scapegoat? Do you feel like he's going to fall on the sword?
No, they're trying to make Flynn the scapegoat. Remember the Inquirer article that dropped yesterday?
No.
Okay, this is important. You may think that if a story breaks in the National Enquirer, it's not worth paying attention to, but it is for several reasons.
Yeah.
The CEO of the National Enquirer is a gentleman named David Pecker. That's his real name. You can't make that up. He is bosom buddies with Trump. And of course, there's been for years Hillary's and alien and Hillary's dying, right? And Hillary, yep, killed JFK and
the world's ending in 4 days.
The world's ending in 4 days. It's like, whatever. But something very interesting came out yesterday in the midst of all this other shit. It was either yesterday or the day before, where it said Trump catches the spy.
What?
And it was talking about Flynn. And it was basically, I thought I shared this with you.
No.
But the Inquirer, this went under the radar because of all this other shit that went down yesterday. But Michael Flynn got thrown under the bus per the National Enquirer. And why does that matter? That's because it obviously came at the behest of either Trump or somebody very close to Trump to float that olive branch out there. So
see if it sticks.
Well, lay the groundwork at least.
Yeah.
So I think, and I think
so
we predicted this a few weeks
that
ago.
Michael Flynn, what? The catches the spy. What's the point?
Well, the article was vague and stupid, but the gist was, yes, they're sort of like admitting that there was collusion with the Russians from the Trump campaign, but it was all Michael Flynn. Yeah.
Okay.
And let's pivot to this other latest revelation where it's come out that Michael Flynn, remember, some potential trouble he's in now is retroactively filing as a foreign agent because he was working on behalf of Turkish interests.
Right.
And one of those Turkish interests was a Turkish dissident who they blame for the recent coup and the uprising. And Michael Flynn was apparently in on meetings, at least where it talked about kidnapping this guy. And
right. This just happened yesterday. I didn't find out about this.
And whisking him away to Turkey to stand trial for treason.
Right.
So all this while he was the United States National Security Advisor.
Yes. And can we just really quickly redefine the facts of who these people were? Because the administration is really, really trying to say these people had a minor role. They weren't really important.
Yes, Spicer said he had a temporary minor role.
Paul Manafort was the campaign manager of the Trump campaign.
Yeah, he replaced Lewandowski.
The campaign manager. Okay, that is the most important job in a campaign.
Yeah,
that's
obviously.
The person who
it's written in
is
the name.
Literally glued to the candidate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You make them do things. You set their schedule. You decide what the message is. All these things. Like, you have a communications person and other people for all of that, but this is the head of the beast is the campaign manager. The campaign manager in some ways is more important than the candidate in terms of messaging and what happens and what doesn't happen and how the campaign is functioning. The candidate is often just the face of it, and they just are a puppet for the campaign manager. That's the reality. I've worked on a campaign, and I'm telling you, the campaign manager is an incredibly powerful role.
Yeah.
So when the Trump administration comes out and says Paul Manafort had a minor role during the campaign, that's bullshit. That's fucking bullshit.
It's obviously quantifiable bullshit.
He was running the campaign. He was running Donald Trump. Okay.
Yeah.
Michael Flynn didn't have a minor temporary role in the transition team.
He was the National Security Advisor,
which is an incredibly powerful role. It's not like he was the campaign manager and was talking to Russia. He's the National Security Advisor while at the same time an unregistered foreign agent for a different government. So let's not buy into the Trump administration's bullshit that these people were just minor outliers. These were integral people that helped the campaign and transition function, period. That's all. Just don't lose sight of that. Don't let them be like, he's was the campaign manager, but like, you
know, yeah, no, for like a no, day, or, no, but not no, really.
No, no.
Also, it's just, it's unbelievable. Every day with Spicer is just unbelievable.
That guy. Oh my God. Every day I have lunch right at the same time as his press briefing. And I go to the lunchroom in my office and I turn on MSNBC, which everyone hates. Because it's always Sean Spicer's press conference that is that he chooses to have them. Everyone's like, oh, this again, Rach. I'm like, look, go eat lunch somewhere else. This is important. That's but no, high comedy. The guy, he gets under my skin. Like, oh, listening to him talk is a challenge.
Well, I mean, everything he says either blows up in real time or 5 minutes after he's done speaking.
Uh-huh. I don't get it.
Oh, he's...
I mean, he's
the mouthpiece
like,
for the Trump administration.
Trump's
I get
like,
it.
Go say this. And he does.
And he does. Well, here's the thing. I want going back to the healthcare bill. You know, in the day, in the days preceding, it was all, oh, it's going to pass. Oh, it's going to pass. Oh, we have the votes. We have mm-hmm. the votes. Spicer said it, and mm-hmm. Paul Ryan said it, and Trump said it. Mm-hmm. And Trump even told the truckers on that day, it's about to go up for a vote, and it's going to pass. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it wasn't going up for a vote. Of course, he may not have known that because yeah. they delayed it at the time. But, like, how, if you, even if you're a fan of these people, how are you supposed to take them seriously at this point?
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, it's one thing if you say, you know, we think it's a strong bill and the vote may happen soon. And we're pretty confident that we can do it. We got some work to do. But, you know, very rarely mm-hmm. did they talk like that. It was no. all, you know,
Trump's not capable of that.
North Korea style.
Yeah. No.
Oh, what, of hedging?
Yeah.
Of showing less than 100% confidence right. in whatever it is he wants?
Nope. He doesn't believe, really, I think, that he that's possible for him to not get what he wants.
Well, aren't these things going to pile up?
Yeah.
You would think.
And they're going to weigh on his already fragile mental health. Absolutely.
Well, I'm
Absolutely.
Not so much worried about his mental health. Worried about our national health.
Yeah, me too.
Well, you know, lost in all of this, this chaos this week, was the fact that the hearings for Neil Gorsuch started.
Yes.
Now, we didn't even get to the budget, and we may not get to it this episode, because we only have about 15 minutes left.
Yeah.
So which would you rather talk about? Let's talk about Gorsuch.
Yeah. He's from Colorado.
Because the budget is not going to happen.
No.
It's worth talking about.
Weeks and months, we've got to talk about that.
Yeah. But let's talk about Gorsuch, because the Gorsuch hearings happened... Maybe at a convenient time for Republicans that they are under the radar.
It's too much at once. So when we're talking about Russia and taking away your health insurance, some pretty fair-minded jurist from Colorado is like, well, I'm sure it's fine, right?
Well, some things have gotten exposed, though, because we do pay attention to that, too. We pay
I'm
attention to everything.
I'm obsessed with the Supreme Court, so yes.
So why don't you give the background of how the hearings went and what this guy's all about and where we're heading. And some Democrats are talking about a filibuster, but...
So this guy, Neil Gorsuch, is a federal district court judge in Colorado. He's got a pretty impressive pedigree.
Here in Boulder.
He is a serious person. He's a serious jurist, which is... I think surprised both you and I.
Yeah, yeah. We thought Trump was going to pick like a Harriet Myers type.
Yeah,
like his personal...
His bankruptcy lawyer or something. Like, we were not convinced that he was going to pick a serious
But, well,
jurist.
He didn't. They gave him a
right.
list.
Yeah, and so they picked this guy.
Yeah.
Neil Gorsuch. He is a constitutional originalist, which means that he's very much like the man he's replacing, which was Scalia, which means that the... Constitution should be interpreted precisely as it is written with no context.
Yes. Don't stop and think about that for a second. Like blacks were 3/5 of a person and women didn't have the right to vote.
Right.
Because constitutional originalists.
Airplanes or the internet or any of the things that like constitutional
that make modern life what it is.
Right. Makes me crazy. Because you taking anything out of the context in which it was written and just leaving it in the context in which it was written and not applying sort of
real world
logic and like common sense.
Well, it's a step just below evangelicals, right?
Yes.
Who take the Bible word for word like it should be a handbook of how to live day to day life.
Right, right. It's exactly that. He's got a pretty shady history with the religious freedom stuff.
Oh, that's mild, putting it mildly.
Yeah. So he's very much in the camp of
Hobby Lobby.
Yeah. Hobby Lobby and religious freedom trumps everything, and interpreting religious freedom to mean freedom to discriminate, freedom to impart
deny
your religion.
Rights of others.
Yeah, deny the rights of others because of your religion, which is a perversion of the First Amendment, in my opinion and in reality. he's in that camp. I do want to. So there was an accusation made by one of his students because he is a professor in his spare time.
At CU Boulder?
Yeah.
CU Boulder Law.
Uh-huh. And he taught an ethics class. And in the ethics class, he was talking about women in the workplace. And one of his students wrote a letter to the Judiciary Committee prior to these hearings to say that he made some very disturbing comments in class around women in the workplace, and particularly around maternity leave. I did some digging into the veracity of that claim, and I'll explain it briefly, but I do think maybe it was taken out of context considering the type of class that it was in.
That's fair.
So he said, the woman claims that he was making comments suggesting that women are like sneaky and take advantage of companies by not telling them that they either are or intend to become pregnant and then get a job and then take pregnancy leave and get paid leave for their pregnancy.
So sneaky like that.
And that's obviously a horrifically offensive thing to say and wrong on a million levels, and obviously. But several other people have come out and talked and sort of given context to those comments that he made. And it was basically sort of like a Socratean sort of lesson where it's an ethics class. So he's presenting questions.
You're
and he's playing
to
the devil's advocate.
Yeah.
And he's saying provocative things to get you to defend why. Because these are people who are going to be lawyers.
And making arguments.
And making arguments and having to defend things that other people are going to say to them in order to make the case that is the most constitutional.
Sure.
And
I can understand that.
And so he probably did say those things, but he was saying them in the context of tell me why I'm wrong.
Sure. And
tell me why I'm wrong. Tell me why that's not correct. Yeah. Tell me how you would defend that in court. Tell me why the law doesn't say that, or explain it. Right.
Yeah. So I've taught high school ethics classes.
Yeah.
I know how they work.
I've been in them. Like we did this. And so I do think that his comments and this letter were taken out of context in terms of the type of class that it was and what he said. I don't know that for sure, but a lot of people post reading the letter who have taken classes from him and people who were in the class with her said, this is not what he intended. He never represented this as his opinion.
Okay,
this is
I can
not
live with that.
So I'm okay. I just want to get that out there because I'm a
but on the other hand,
rabid, raging feminist. And I read like, he's got a women's problem. And I'm like, what the hell? And then I was like, all right, let's just take a break. Let me make sure.
Yeah.
And I would say, from my opinion, that's sort of unknown.
On the other hand, if something had come out where Sotomayor taught a class and said something to the opposite effect, the right-wingers would lose their minds. And they did.
Right.
Over,
right.
like, speeches...
They did.
She made
that
were totally
to
innocuous.
A female version of the Bohemian Grove, which we won't even get into because it's going to sound crazy, but it's real. Anyway, and they were like, you know,
they attacked
her about that. They attacked her about the idea that she thought that as a Hispanic woman, she might be able to bring a different perspective to the court. And they were
that,
like,
that
what
meant
does
she
that
was
mean?
Racist and hates
that
white people.
That means that you're against white people. And like, so it's craziness. I'm just trying
to. Of course,
to bring
she got confirmed in the
reality
end, anyway.
And truth into this confirmation process. And that's what I would
she
like to say.
She got confirmed
about that.
With like eight. Votes,
yeah, no,
Republican
she's fine.
Votes or
yeah.
something like
she's
that.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Ian Silveri of Progress Now in Colorado, which is a progressive organization, obviously. Ian Silveri, who is the fiance of Brittany Pedersen, who is my state rep.
Yep.
He wrote a really interesting op-ed piece in the Harvard Law Review this week about why no Democrats should vote for Gorsuch, and his argument is that. Setting aside all the problems that we have with his record, in particular about religious freedom stuff, and his constitutional originalism, this is a perversion of how the confirmation process should go. And his opinion is that this is not Trump's seat. It's not his to pick, and that they should hold hearings for Merrick Garland, and they can decide not to confirm him if they choose to so do, and then Trump can put forward whoever he'd like. But this is a stolen seat, and he's in full favor of the filibuster.
Sure.
I don't see it. There's some argument around if you're going to make the argument that President Obama should not have been able to appoint someone to the Supreme Court because he was only going to be president for a year? Should we not conclude these Russia investigations to determine if President Trump's going to remain the president for the remainder of the year before confirmation hearings?
That's a good point.
Should we not take up this cloud of potential treason away from our president before we allow him to put a lifetime appointment on the court? The lifetime appointment of which would not be affected by the impeachment of our president. Once you put somebody in that seat, it's theirs, regardless of what happens to the person who put them there.
And you know what? I don't think that's going to happen in reality, but I really hope that a few Democratic senators get up and make that case just so it's on the record.
I do too.
And I think they will.
I do too.
I think Chuck Schumer actually already has.
Yeah,
to a degree.
Yeah. So if Gorsuch is confirmed,
he
will be.
Yeah. Let's get real.
Yeah.
The Democrats are talking about a filibuster, but
No. There's too much going on.
Yeah.
Which is why it's good timing for the Republicans. I think he's a serious person. I think he will do a lot of damage to Fourth Amendment stuff. He's very pro law enforcement. He is
pro business, almost to a comical degree.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Michael Bennett, who's the senator from Colorado, he's in a really sticky place because he knows Neil Gorsuch, and Neil Gorsuch is from Colorado,
and he's fairly popular here because he's a Coloradan.
And Michael Bennett is what some people call liberal Democrat. I wouldn't characterize him that way.
Well, he's what used to be considered a moderate Democrat.
Now
he's what's considered a super flaming left-wing liberal.
He's not, though.
But he's not in reality. I'm saying
he's not.
Because
he's liberal for Colorado because we are.
Because the paradigm has been shifted so far to the right that he's what is considered a super ultra left-wing.
For Colorado. Like, he would not be considered liberal in San Francisco. But for Colorado to be a senator, and he was appointed senator after Ken Salazar left. Anyway, and he's been since reelected. But he's in a really sticky position politically because the left of our party is going to push him really hard to not confirm this man.
Mm-hmm.
For all the reasons that Ian Silvery pointed out and the things we've just been talking about.
Like us, exactly, yeah. Directly.
Yes, we will be doing so as well. But he is kind of, he's going to confirm him. I mean, he came out basically and said, two wrongs don't make a right, and we should not filibuster his hearing. We should, allow it to go forward and have a vote.
I don't think he believes that.
I do.
You think so? It's
yeah.
Such a stupid argument.
No, it is. It's absurd. I think he will. I think he's pushing to allow the vote, but I think he'll vote no. That's what I think. I think he wants to allow the confirmation hearing to go forward. He knows the guy's going to get confirmed anyway, and for political cover, he'll vote no.
Okay.
That's what I think.
Politics.
Yep. Politics.
Isn't it anything fun? Else on Gorsuch? We got about 7-8 minutes left.
No. Other than I do worry. He's not a crazy person, you know, he's not some unhinged wild man or anything. But that doesn't matter to me as much as his interpretation of the Constitution flies in the face of the things that matter to me. And when you have a constitutional originalist...
Well, he sucks on voting rights.
He does.
And sucks on reproductive rights.
It's because of this interpretation of the Constitution. Whenever you have a constitutional originalist, they tend to vote against the very things that matter to me, including voting rights.
That matter to most people, I would
say. And all of the things that I... You know, when we said elections matter and the Supreme Court has a vacancy, this is what we were talking about.
Yeah.
This guy is young and he's healthy and he could potentially... I mean, he said in the hearings...
He could be there for 30 years.
Right? Yeah. He said in the hearings, I would have walked out of the room if Donald Trump had asked me to overturn Roe v. Wade. Okay. But when the case comes to you, what are you going to do?
Well,
he said it's settled law and you're like... Okay.
I don't know that case, it's not going to be all-encompassing. It's going to be a series of slow cuts.
Yeah.
Is how I think it's going to go. The states, we see it happening everywhere already. You know, Oklahoma and Mississippi, and they're going to steadily keep closing the abortion mm-hmm. clinics, and they're going to do more trap laws and, mm-hmm. you know.
Yep. Oklahoma recently God. What's the guy's name? I can't remember, but some garbage human came out and said they were trying to ban abortions based on fetal abnormalities.
Yes.
And he came out and with no exception for rape and incest.
Of course not.
No. And he made this very impassioned argument on the floor of the Oklahoma State House about how rape and incest might not be, quote, the best thing that ever happened to you.
It might not be.
In
some cases, implying in some cases, maybe it will be.
Maybe it would be like a pretty good day. I don't know. It's God's will. And you can't sit here and tell me that God did not intend for that to happen. So you need to carry that baby to term. Whether or not the fetus has viability in terms of fetal abnormalities, a lot of times we're talking about things that the baby will die within minutes of being born.
Or be stillborn.
Or...
born with horrible birth defects.
Yeah, and just live in abject pain and torment for a couple of days before dying.
Oh, yeah, and you don't get health coverage for that baby either. Sorry.
No, of course not. Fuck you. But seriously, and he said because it's God's will...
Or maternity leave if it lives.
But that's not the point.
Sure, it's just icing on the cake.
It's like, literally... these are the same people that vote constantly to make sure we don't have Sharia law. And they're like, but God said you had to have this baby, even though it's going to die within a day and you might die. And it's your rape baby from your stepdad or whatever. Like that is Sharia law in other parts of the world.
Well, forget God stepdad, said it. Real dad.
God said this needed to happen to you. God put a baby in you. And you're going to have that fucking baby.
No matter what, come hell or high water.
That's right. That is governing by religion. And when he was sort of confronted by Democrats in Oklahoma, I didn't know there were any, but apparently there are.
There are a few.
And they said, like, are you literally saying that you would like to enforce this law based on the Bible? And he said, yes. Absolutely. Yes, of course. That's the will of God. And you're like, wow. The First Amendment.
Well, this is Oklahoma.
Yep.
So if that went to the Supreme Court, we'd be a little worried about Gorsuch. But I think even the circuit court would strike that down for now.
Absolutely.
But, you know.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah. So we're entering some wild times here. It's going to be really interesting to see how all the Russia stuff unfolds. Again, I think that it's really going to be up much more to the media to really unravel, pull on all these loose threads to see where they lead, rather than relying on the House Intelligence Committee as long as Nunes is there. And Nunes is not going to step aside, and Ryan is not going to kick him out. I mean, you're really going to have to catch this guy with the hand in the cookie jar to where, like, the FBI or local police have to, like, arrest him for something. Mm-hmm. To get him out of his position to run interference for the Trump campaign.
Yeah, I think it'll be the media, and I think it'll be the intelligence agencies leaking shit to the media because there's something there. And that's how...
Right, well, listening to Trey Gowdy, the only thing that matters in all this is the leaks.
Is the leaks. Yeah. Because, of course, if we can find the leaks, then we can stop the story.
No one was worried about the leaks when it came to, like, the DNC hack and the Podesta hack and, you know... Right. In fact, they went out of their way to say, well, why don't even talk about the leaks? It's the content that is, you know, that's what really matters.
Right.
And the media was very, very complicit in that, let me tell you.
Yep.
We'll get to that. But that's about going to wrap it up for us. You had a shout out.
I did. I wanted to thank our friend and listener and just a delightful human, Rebecca Romans, who sent me the most amazing socks on earth. it's just like a little pick me up. They're delightful and lovely, and I'll post a picture of them on Twitter. Well, and I wear them later this afternoon. But thank you, Rebecca, for being a loyal listener and lovely, delightful human generally.
Yeah. If you guys want to send us stuff, we'll take it. As long as it's in good taste. And if you want to send us snacks, homemade cookies, brownies, muffins.
Donate to our Patreon.
Well, I was going to get to that. I was going to say, in lieu of socks, and although Rebecca did both, she's donated to our Patreon and sent us goodies.
Aww.
And I know some of you folks are waiting for your Where's Cory Gardner stickers. Those are coming.
Yep.
Don't worry. I got that on my list. And go visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/irreverent testimony. We're up to 4 or 5
donors right now. I'm very excited about that.
That's nice.
That's super
cool.
Thanks,
guys.
And we should pull a few strings with Greg and get Scott on our podcast.
Yeah.
I know. I'm sort of kidding. He's kind of, he's on Joy Reid's show. I think he's a little, he's a little too busy for us these days.
Maybe.
But you never know. Okay, so that's going to do it for us this week. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. We're going to have all kinds of more stuff for you. And adios.
Bye.